This is your host, Bill Snow, and I have a hot dog of an episode for you this time. I interview Will Nonnemaker with Team Salen. If you've been around sports car racing for the last 30 years or so, you've probably met Will, you've probably followed Will on his racing progression, and if you're involved with endurance racing now, there's no mistaking Team Salen. They're at the events, they're on the podiums, and Will shares his motorsports journey and what makes Team Salen tick, as well as what they have planned for this year. Let's throw the green flag on this episode.
Well, as I mentioned, I have Will Nonnemaker on from Team Salen. And Will, it is great to have you here.
Bill, it's great to be on your show. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I want to say thanks again for having me down to your facility. Was able to see the race car operation, the business operations for what you guys do in franchising. And it was a great time. I really appreciate your hospitality.
Yeah, it's fun to have you down here. You know, it's every race team set up differently. You know, I mean, you kind of utilize your auto care center and the race team kind of together. We do the same thing with our automotive division where we maintain our street cars. So everybody does just a little bit different, but everybody has a way to make it work in the racing world.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit more about you and your motorsports background. So tell listeners, who are you? What do you do?
So our family, we race endurance sports car racing. You know, you do the same thing in Champ Car. We've been doing this forever. My dad actually raced in the first Nelson Ledges 24 hours back in 1980. So, you know, our family just really loves the aspect, the teamwork, the longevity, the whole process of an endurance race. We love that.
That's great. And so what do you do career-wise?
So our family does Subway restaurants. We've been doing that since about 1987. So the first Subways that opened up here in the Akron-Canton area were ones we owned.
That is great. Any lessons learned from franchising you apply to racing or vice versa, things you learned at the track that you're like, hey, you know what, this would help us run a store better?
I think systems and processes are very important. You know, I hear that all the time when people go out and do an endurance race and they're like, they hadn't even thought about what's going to occur at the next steps, right? And that's a big thing for us in our racing, but it's the same thing with our business. You know, there needs to be steps, processes, so the next person coming in can plug into that position. You know, we have our full-time crew members that work here, but then we have weekend warriors and they don't come to all the events. So it's really nice to be able to have them come in, and we have a whole system. I have a checklist. You may see it if you go by our cars on like Saturday night. There's an entire checklist and the exact tools you need to do a complete prep. And that way, whether that guy comes to four races a year or three races a year, it's complete plug and play of knowing how to nut and bolt the car. The same thing goes with the Subway. You may have a borrow from one store to the next. They come into that store. They need to be able to look at that system and know exactly how to close the store down when it's time for the end of the night.
Wow. Yeah, so there are some carryovers. I think that's great. And it is so important that, you know, when you have things set up on processes, that's why your team, your race team, can do so well. And you show up to an event, and I've seen you guys roll in, and you're setting things up. Everyone's got a job. You guys are executing during the race. You're on the podium, so it certainly pays off.
Yeah, you know, the big thing there is we want to have fun at the racetrack. You know, that the guys, that's their... For a lot of them, you know, they have full-time jobs somewhere else. That's their time off. So they want to have fun. They want to enjoy themselves. But we all know we're there for one reason, and that is to the best we can. Maybe we don't win, but we are going to do the exact best we can. You'll probably notice we're usually the last ones there on Friday and Saturday night. Even if both cars finished and had no problems, we're still nutting and bolting and aligning the cars because we want to make sure that we haven't missed one little piece there before it's time to go home.
Right, exactly. Well, let's talk a little bit more about your racing background. You in 2022, you personally celebrated 30 years in racing. How did you first get started?
Well, my dad had been racing since the early 70s. His first actual race car was a Ford Pinto. And so through the years, you know, I crewed, I did, you know, it was my passion. I would race big wheels at home. I'd race a big wheel a year and break it a year, you know. I think you and I talked a little bit about that, about big wheels. So, you know, I was always racing big wheels and breaking them. But when I got old enough to start racing, I couldn't afford very much. I was paying for college like a lot of people. And I found a go-kart that I was going to go race. And my dad knew the consequences of driving a go-kart. I'm not talking the kind that have guardrails around you, but I mean real honest-to-gosh go-kart. And so we went and bought ourselves an old Volkswagen Golf, and that's how I got into it. Again, because my dad didn't want to put me into a go-kart. I got a Golf. And, you know, the tires would last me a whole year. The brakes would last me a whole year. So, you know, I'd camp at the track, you know, because everything was cheap. You know, you do everything you can to try to squeeze out an extra couple SCCA regionals.
Oh, exactly. Is that where you first went racing, was SCCA?
I did. My very first driver school was Nelson Ledges. So I went up there. It was the one they used to always have a first driver school right at the end of, like, middle of May. And so I remember going up to that with our Volkswagen, and we didn't even have a tow dolly or anything. We just drove our motorhome up, and I drove behind in our Volkswagen Golf, and I was like, don't wreck it, because I don't know how we're going to get home.
That is a great story. So I'm going to guess, do you remember who the instructor was for your driver school?
I don't remember who the instructor was, so I don't remember that, but there's a couple people I still know who were at that school, which was kind of neat.
Yeah. There's been a little discussion about bringing a driver's school back to Nelson Ledges, and we had an open house not too long ago for the Ohio Region SCCA, and people were asking, like, I want to take the next step. I want to go to Nelson Ledges and get my comp license. So who knows? Maybe they'll bring it back.
And Reed and Sandy Kreider always ran that program. I don't know what they're doing, you know, with that these days, but, you know, they were a big part of Nelson Ledges. They never had ownership of the track, but, you know, as far as what kept a big part of Nelson Ledges and SCCA events going at that track for, like, the 80s and 90s was them.
Right. Yep. And I saw their schedule just came out for their test and tune days. Do you guys ever take the Porsches out, or is that those a little too overkill?
We usually don't take the Porsches out for that. I do have a friend that has a Mazda RX-7 like yourself, and he takes it out there once in a while, though.
Just to wake the neighbors up.
That's right. That's what a rotary will do for you.
Yeah. Let's talk. So over those going on 32 years now of your racing, what are some of the highlights? What are the things that stand out to you as pinch me moments?
Gosh, there's so many. You know, we've raced at all levels. You know, we've raced at what we call, you know, I call sportsman endurance racing right now, you know, Champ Car, American Endurance Racing, World Racing League. But a significant part of my racing has also been in what I consider professional endurance racing, which today they call it the Michelin Pilot Challenge. You know, years ago it was the Firehawk Series. But, you know, there's just a lot of pinch me moments from that. And then we also end up stepping up to the Rolex Series. So, you know, when I was a kid, I dreamed of prototypes. Dreamed of them. Dreamed in running in the Rolex 24 hours. My high school graduation present I asked for my dad was, let's just go down to the 24 hours and watch it. Like, to me, that was my dream. You know, I'd watch Dave Despain on TBS getting up on Sunday morning when, you know, there's no internet. And you get up at 6 a.m. because that was the first update you'd had since 9 o'clock the day before. So that was my dream, and I worked up towards it. You know, we had great success in the Michelin Pilot Series. So to finally get into a prototype like my hero Al Holbert was pretty cool.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the progression of those early days of racing the golf in SCCA. How did you make your way up to the Firehawk Series and Michelin and Rolex type stuff?
So as I progressed forward, we were racing Mazda MX-6s at the time. And so I was also crewing there. And so my next progression was to stop running regionals, and I would do the test days on the pro weekend. So I had a car. It was a wreck car we had. I fixed it back up just like everything. You know, you're like, how can I just get myself out there? And then I say that all the time to people. I say, quit waiting for the perfect day to get out there and just get out there. Because if you're going to wait for the perfect day, you're going to be way too old to start. So just get yourself out there and start learning about it. And that's what I did. I took a wreck car we had. I'd take it to test days. And that got me learning the tracks. And then from there, I was able to show my speed, and I was able to get people to rent rides with me. So that's a big part about endurance racing. You know that with what we're doing here in Champ Car, but especially in pro racing, finding somebody who's willing to put money up and have you as their co-driver is a unique thing. So I worked up towards that and grew from there. And then when my brother Wayne came along and he graduated college, he and I both teamed up together. And that was the real catalyst for us, because the two of us together became quite a force. You know, we had a lot of success. We won in the Michelin Pilot. We won the Touring Championship 2 years in a row, and then we won the Grand Sports title 2 years in a row. And again, it's just part of, you know, talk to systems and processes, but also, you know, just stepping to that next level as a driver team.
That's awesome. What did you learn there that you took over to your current Champ Car Endurance program?
Well, it's funny because if you look at the series today, almost like Michelin Pilot and the WeatherTech, those are all pre-built cars by the manufacturers. And that's the evolution that's come about. It's nothing wrong or right about it, but that's the evolution. But when we came along back in the 80s and 90s, you got a car. Yes, everybody starts with a Volkswagen Rabbit, or everybody starts with an Acura Integra. But what you do with that, as long as it's in the rules, you build, right? Mm-hmm. And so what Champ Car is about is building your own car. So really what Champ Car for us right now is just the accumulation of 30 and 40 years of knowledge of what it takes to take a production car and put it on a racetrack, both reliability and speed. So for us, a lot of times, this is just like going back to our roots instead of being in, like I said, what are essentially just spec cars. And there's nothing wrong with it. I think it's fantastic. It's certainly working in those pro series, but that's not really what I grew up with. I grew up with taking a car, taking a shell and building it.
Right. And I saw that happening at your shop. You guys were, you know, had a car that, I guess got a little scratched at Sebring, right? And you're taking it down to get it ready for April Daytona, right?
Correct. And that's what's fun too. When we got these cars, you know, the nice part was I was able to find both Boxsters on, I think, either eBay or Facebook Marketplace. I think I got one for $2,500 out of Pittsburgh. So, you know, I spent maybe $6,000 for two Boxsters. So that's a heck of a way to get into a series.
Oh, it is. They look much worth much more than that. They do. They look good. I love the color scheme. Maybe what's one thing in those 32 years of racing that didn't happen that either you're still chasing or that you wished happened?
Probably going back to our prototype. You know, we only had the opportunity to run it 1 year. And again, I don't regret that because I would take 1 year over never.
Mm-hmm.
We were so close that year to winning it a couple times. We were on the pole twice. We had a great driver lineup. Wayne was co-driving with Dane Cameron, who just run the Rolex 24 hours, and he's got a resume to beyond belief. Our other driver we had that year was Simon Pagenaud, IndyCar champion, Indy 500 winner. So we had great driver lineups. We were on the pole twice. We led probably four or five races, but we just never cracked through to that victory that year. And like I said, we only had 1 year to do that. And that would have been one that been, gosh, it'd have been nice. Cause then we could have not called brag, but we would have had that honor of being able to have won in all four different classes, IMSA. We had one in street touring, grand sports, GT, and prototype. And that would have been a pretty cool deal because not many teams are able to pull that off and go from the grassroots level, boom, touring, boom, 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 boom. So that would have been nice. I think the biggest honor I think we have as a team is we won with the RX-8 Mazda for the very last time that a rotary ever won. And it was at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca. So you want to talk about a pretty cool thing. The last time a rotary ever won a race, our team did it at Mazda Raceway. All the Mazda officials were there, including John Doonan, who's now the president of IMSA. So what a great honor for us that year to be able to do that and then step into prototypes next year.
That is certainly exciting. Now, do you guys still have that RX-8? Is it floating around somewhere?
No. I have very few of my old race cars because how do you go from one race car next? You sell your old ones to help fund the new ones, right? So I've sold over 45 race cars over the years because it just gets us to the next level.
You know, that just spawned a question. So how do you balance everything that you're doing, you know, from the career side of things, the running the race team, moving assets around and staying on top of all of it? How are you able to do that?
Well, I think two things are vital. One is you got to have good people in your different divisions. You know, as people say, well, how do you run all these different companies? I say, I don't run all these companies. We have great people in those divisions. Now, do we still supervise and meet with them and make sure we're all going in the right direction? Yes, we plan things out. But without good team members, it doesn't work. The other thing is to keep in check what you're doing here. Even when we were pro racing, you have to remember that it's still racing. You know, it's not the end all be all, but it's so easy as a racer to go, well, I just want this last little bit and I want this last little bit. Right. And it's tough because as you keep doing that, you have to keep in perspective of what racing is all about.
Right. That's great advice. Now you are still behind the wheel. So when the team rolls up, you're driving, right?
Correct.
What were some of the highlights from last season? Tell me about it.
Wow, we had a really good year last year. A lot of it was luck. A lot of it was just putting our nose to the grindstone and just figuring out what things we were missing, you know, as far as reliability. But we went five races in a row with getting a first and second. And getting a first and second in any race is difficult. And we did it five races in a row. We did it at Watkins Glen 2, Mid-Ohio 1 and 2, and Pittsburgh 1 and 2. So we were just very, very fortunate to pull that off. A couple of them were really close, like Mid-Ohio, Justin Hilly and the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot Miata finished third behind us, 1 second behind, and he had just set the fastest race lap. So it wasn't like we had that one in the bag at all, but nevertheless, we pulled that off. And again, that was just a streak that we kept having it happen, and we're not getting hit, we're not having any mechanical issues, and we kept getting the code 35s perfectly. As you know, and in these endurance races, getting your pit stop in when you're not doing it under green is so crucial. And, you know, we really work hard at that strategy, because if you aren't getting those in and you're pitting under green, it is a killer.
Yes. And for the listeners that don't know, a code 35 is basically a full course yellow in Champ Car, and it's communicated through a pretty cool flagtronic system. So if you're able to time your stop right around a code 35, where you're driving 35 miles an hour around the track, to Will's point, that's a good thing to do it during that time.
And I think that code 35s have been wonderful for the sportsman endurance racings. And this is because when we have a code 35, we don't supposedly bunch up as long as people are keeping that pace. So when we go back to green, we're all still somewhat bunched up. It's hard enough for pro racers to not wreck going back to green when you're all bunched up, let alone people who are not doing this full time. And I would contend that series such as IMSA would actually benefit from it as far as competitiveness of the racing, you know, like a true winner was going to be there, because when they keep doing those full course cautions, their cautions are probably twice as long as they need to be because of all the wave buys, etc. What it isn't good for is TV. And the reality is that's what it's for there. It's an entertainment business, you know, so I understand what they're doing. It creates that entertainment. But from a pure sporting standpoint, code 35 makes much for even racing, you know, because you can't get way far behind, get a code 35 and come all the way back around to the back.
Right. No, that's a very valid point. How many drivers do you have on a race weekend?
We'll have four. So as you mentioned, myself, my dad, and my brother, and then our partner, Joe Salen. So we team up that way. And that's nice because we get maximum track time.
Gotcha. And you're running two cars.
Yes.
Right? All right. Before you jump on to what you have planned for this year, a listener might be asking, how do I get the race with a team like this? So if someone's looking to grow like you have from grassroots, you know, SCCA, NASA racing, up through what you type of program you guys are running, how does someone get introduced to you? What do they have to prove to you? What do they have to bring to the table?
Well, I think if anybody's going to get in, like I said, you just got to get your feet out there and get wet, get some track time, whether that's just getting a track day car and getting some laps in. And then there's a lot of teams out there that will rent rides to you. And, you know, in the beginning, if you're just getting used to it, maybe you don't go to the elite teams to rent the rides first. You know, there's a lot of just good buddy teams out there that you can get in the car with. But then when you feel like you're ready to step up the next level, there's some great teams out there like Atlanta Speedworks. They were the second most entered team in Champ Car last year. They're running 2 to 3 boxers every weekend. I know 901 Motorsports and their BMWs do a lot of rentals. So again, that would be the teams I would look at if I was trying to get to that elite level to step up on renting rides, which it may seem expensive sometimes, but when you actually run your own team, you find out real quickly that it's not just the money, but the time. I've seen people say, gosh, that's really expensive to rent that ride. And I go, not only are you only covering your share of the cost, you're not putting any time in. Because as you know, it's not just the money. It's all the time you're putting in on top of that.
Mm-hmm. It adds up.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Yeah, there's a lot of times I'm like, why don't I just show up and run a ride? you know, but there are people in our sport that love that, you know, wrenching, and, you know, mm-hmm. they're going to, you know, maybe do it for less expensive, in a less expensive way, hopefully. But, yeah, there's nothing against arriving and driving. It's a great way to go for a lot of folks.
And that's how pro racing is really built around. They're prep shops where very few people are owner drivers. Like when we were there at those last couple years of pro racing, we were in the rare breed who actually owned our team and raced it. Now that's how it all began back in the 80s, 90s in the Firehawk series. But you know, the last couple years, and it's still this way now to the day, that mainly there's prep shops that run. There's not owners that get in the car and drive their own cars. It's just very rarely you see that anymore. It's just a different world. Worlds change. I can only tell you that we just love this sportsman racing, though, because it's so much fun. I'm getting maximum track time. I mean, if you look at it, you come in, you can come in on a Friday night, right? And at Mid-Ohio, I can race 7 hours on one day and 7 hours the next day and go home and be home by that night. That's amazing to have that much track time in short amount of time away from home.
No, you're exactly right. And you're around some great people at some awesome facilities.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what do you guys have planned for 2024?
Well, we're excited to get back into Champ Car. Our first race is going to be at Daytona. Like usual, they're going to have about 125 cars there, which that's a big track, but still 125 cars on that track is still a lot.
Yes, it is.
So, and then we're going to do Watkins Glen with the Salem's Champ Yard Dog at the Glen. So that'll be fun. There's always about 100 cars in that race as well.
How do you balance that around the race weekend? Do you personally have a lot of responsibilities that, you know, your team partner is the title sponsor of the event? You mean, are there obligations, things like that?
There are. I'm fortunate that it comes right as school ends, so I might as well bring in my kids. You know, you'll notice a family program, just like the one time we did that interview at Mid-Ohio, that was my son holding the camera. So it is a family business we have and a family race team. And what I'll do is I'll use my kids and Wayne's kids to help do a lot of the setup. So, and it, of course, that's not the only event that Salem sponsors. They are, of course, they've been doing the Salem 6 hours for over almost 25 years. So,
right. All right. So we stopped off at that Watkins Glen. What else does the schedule look like?
I think we're going to do Nelson. You know, I think that'll be a good Champ Car race in the Mid-Ohio and Pittsburgh, and then probably do Sebring at the end of the year. We might branch out and do another type of series maybe this year, like World Racing League. We'll just have to see, and they're going to be doing Watkins Glen. So we'll have to see how it plays out. We've run that series before and had good success. I think we've won 3 times overall there. So I don't think we'll have guaranteed success again, but we'll have fun.
Yeah. Is that decision made based on economics, scheduling, a mix of different things? What will make you guys say, yeah, look, we're going to go do WRL for a race?
Well, it's at Watkins Glen, and that's Joe Salen's home race because he's from Buffalo. So we try to pick, you know, after doing pro racing for so long and you do the schedule will come out, and whatever the schedule was, you know, if you were committed to doing that circuit, right? So after doing that for 25 years, we're really enjoying the fact that I can pick whatever race we want to do. It's what we want to do, not what the schedule forces you to do. Like I remember one year we did Laguna Seca. The race ended on Saturday for us, and we had to be at Lime Rock Thursday.
Wow.
California, Lime Rock. And it was just, I mean, that makes it miserable. So those are the things that when it comes to pro racing, some of it becomes a little painful. And what we really look forward to is picking a schedule for us that doesn't look painful, tracks we want to do, like we did Road America last year, because that's a bucket list racetrack, Daytona's bucket list. So we always try to pick a couple bucket list tracks, but we also try to pick tracks that are close by because, again, that allows us to have that opportunity to come in and out as quickly as can.
Right. Yeah. What are you most looking forward to this year?
That's a good question. I think every year is just again to go out there and have fun, right? Like if we can just continue to have fun success, that's what we're looking forward to. You know, it's if you can just end the year with fun and success, that's half the battle. I'll race anything. You know, I showed you that we're running the 12 hours of Canton go-kart race here. You know, it's right. I'll do anything. I don't have a chance of winning. I weigh too much for that, but it doesn't matter. To get a race 12 hours in a go-kart and I get to run 4 to 6 hours of that, I mean, I'll drive anything.
Yeah. Look what's on my desk.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. Jason stopped by. We had a Rolex watch party here at the shop, so I got a chance to meet Jason and talk to him a little bit. So that conflicts with our NCM Champ Car event, but nonetheless, going to keep tabs on what's happening down there. It's a fun thing.
I think he would be a great addition to one of your podcasts because what he's trying to create, he and James, who's the owner down here at K1, they're trying to create something that's just beyond an electric kart track, right? You know, they have their boost leagues. They have this endurance series, not just that race, but an endurance series. They're trying to create a culture here, and I think they're starting to accomplish that here. I mean, we've got kids who and families who are coming in from Avon, Lake, up in Cleveland just for the endurance race. And then for the 12 hours, we've got people coming in from California, Alaska, Chicago. So, I mean, that 12 hours is mega.
Yeah, that sounds like a great time. I'll definitely follow back up with him on that. It's a good suggestion to have him on as a guest. So let's talk a little bit more about the race team. What is it easy to attract mechanics and technicians you need? You know, who drives the truck? What are some of the things that people don't know about behind the scenes?
I think one of the biggest things is as you continue to build crew is to maintain building on that. Because we've got several people who've been crewing with us since the 80s and 90s. I've also got a couple people that I'm just bringing on in the past couple years as brand new crew members. But you bring that group in, they all get along, and as if you're trying to run a team to build that core up and then figure out what it is that's going to make them want to come back, and also figure out if there's people that aren't fitting in, that aren't fitting into your culture. You know, maybe they think it's a frat party and your team's a family team. You know, you need to make sure that the culture fits too, because if everybody isn't getting along and it's their spare time, you know, it's really important to look at how are you building up this core group of people. And if you're running four or five races a year, maybe they don't all come to every race just so that you don't wear them out.
Right. Do you ever get anybody from, you know, the subway part of the organization that says, hey, I'm interested in what you're doing over here. Can I come and hang or help or get involved?
Usually those two worlds pretty stay separate. So the one thing we do though, is we use our automotive division here with the race guys. They go out and do a lot of maintenance in the shop. So that is one thing that does have an overlap.
Gotcha.
Which, like I said, I think you're probably doing the same thing with your facility, right?
Yeah. You know, with the Radar Racing team, it just sort of came together, and we have a couple employees that are part of the team and a few of their friends. And what we've realized is it speaks to our culture a little bit. So, you know, like you were saying, you know, about culture and building the core, we have some other technicians that are at other stores that are kind of looking at what we're doing and saying, hey, this is pretty cool. I don't want to race, but I'd like to be involved. You know, how can I help? So you know, we like to say life in the fast lane here at Radar, and that's just another component that supports it. And plus it's fun, right?
Right. It is. Yeah. And it builds teamwork and builds camaraderie, you know, cause you've went through the trenches of a race weekend.
Mm-hmm. You know, and as we go out, we do a lot of youth engagement. So we're talking at schools and organizations like that. And when they see up on the PowerPoint slide, people about their age hanging out at the track, wearing team shirts, what are you guys doing? That's no one's ever talked to us that could be part of how we get involved with an organization or a company. That gives us something different to talk about as we're trying to recruit new people into the industry.
Right. Especially if you're going to tech schools. I mean, that's exciting for them.
Exactly. Yeah. There's nothing like doing a head gasket trackside, right? Or trying to press in a wheel bearing trackside.
Right. For sure.
Yeah. Is there anything we didn't talk about with the Salins race team that you wanted to before we move on to some more things?
You know, it's unique that we've been partnered with Salins now since 2005. It's a meatpacking company out of Buffalo, New York. They've been around since 1869. And it's just such a great combination between the Nonnemaker family and Salins because, you know, we're all about family, kids coming to the track. And Salins, it's been run by a Joe Salins since 1869. And to this day, it's still been a Joe Salins. You know, like, you know, my teammate Joe Salins, his son, Joseph, helps run the plant, and Billy Salins runs in the plant as well. And then the daughter, Alex, she runs their sports park. So it's a really great combination for this family and to be able to come together with each other for this long. And it's unique in this industry for two people to be partnered this long and Salins to be sponsoring a team this long.
Yeah, for sure. That is a long time. What can you get their hot dogs here in Ohio?
You can. There's several groceries that have them, including Bueller's. So,
all right. Next time I'm down that way, I got to pick some up. We always look up here in the Cleveland area. We don't see them. So now they have you on the line, I can ask the question.
And they're natural casing hot dogs. So when you put them on the grill, they burn right up, which is perfect.
Oh, can't wait to grill some of those up. If somebody wanted to get involved with the program, have their name on the side of the car, not from a driver perspective, but from a corporate partnership, how does someone go about that? What are you looking for in terms of partnerships with companies?
You know, when I have had a lot of great partnerships, like NGK has been with us for 30 years. We're coming up on 10 years with Porsche Beechwood. And when we work with a company, the name on the side of the car is like the last afterthought, like the, I call it the cherry on the top of the cake, right? That should be the last thing that's really giving them anything out of this, you know, and as the world's evolved, it's harder in some ways to show, payback, but at the same time, if you put the effort in, it's actually easy. And what I'm referring to is social media. And we've worked really hard the last couple of years for our team to take our partnerships where they used to get exposure on Speed TV. They get exposure when we go to pro race weekends, right? We used to write magazine articles for Grassroots Motorsports. So there was all these venues that were traditional ways to get exposure. But one of the things we've worked hard to do is expand our social media presence. You know, we have our own YouTube series shows, you know, just like Unusual and Unordinary Endurance Racers, where we, you know, the interview with you on your Dodge Neons, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the things we're doing to help get exposure for our partners in social media. So, and we're averaging about 1 million social impressions a year, which is nowhere near like Gears and Gasoline or Donut Media guys. But when it comes to giving return on investment for our partners, to me, that's a big part that any team who's trying to get into this should be looking to give back to their partners.
Well, you guys do a great job on social. I can't start scrolling without seeing something from you and the team.
Yeah, we try hard.
Yeah, and it's engaging, and it's you're always using good images, good graphics. There's a story behind what you're posting.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's got to be a combination. Some of it's got to be YouTube. Some of it's got to be Twitter, you know, / Facebook / Instagram. You've got to find a combination of the two. So.
Right. What is the best motorsports advice you've ever received?
Well, I think one of them I shared was just get out there and do it. Don't wait forever. You know, I think the big thing too is anybody just getting into cars, just get into as many different types of cars as you can so you can get more reps. And if you're going to be somebody who's trying to get into sportsman endurance racing, try to use every asset available to yourself to improve, meaning go get yourself an iRacing setup and go do it. I mean, it's amazing how much doing iRacing. My dad does that right now. So one of the best advice I can give to people is get out there and get yourself something like iRacing to get reps in before you get to the track. Because my dad is spending, you know, here he is in his, like he's in his 70s, right? Mm-hmm. But he's in there in the video game room or the sim room, whatever you want to call it at home. And he's driving that game 5 and 6 hours before he goes to the Glen, before he goes to Sebring. So when he hits the track, he's ready to go. So best advice I can give to people is drive as much as possible and find every capacity you can to be prepared, because you're only going to have so much time on the track. If you're not prepared when you get there, then you're wasting your time.
As it relates to learning new things, maybe there's something new on the management side or the sponsorship side or the car technical side. Where are you going to learn new things?
I'm going to the internet. So I just get on YouTube, TED Talks, you know, there's, you know, when I do all the aerodynamics on our car, I'm no aerodynamicist. I mean, when we pro raced, we had Katie Crawford who knew aerodynamics pretty well, but I don't know aerodynamics. But what I do is I just get on there and I watch videos. There's one guy called, I think it's Kyle Engineering. He used to work for Mercedes-Benz and he's now back home. He retired back to Australia, but he has all these videos on how to do aerodynamics. And I just watch them and I watch them and I watch them. And that's how I learn to do the aerodynamics in our car. So I don't know if they're perfect, but I'm pretty sure if he looked at my car, he'd be like, yeah, you hit it pretty spot on.
Nice. How do people connect and follow you?
If they want to follow with us, just get on, you know, Facebook and YouTube and subscribe to us so that they can stay up to date. So that's a big part of it. Just we'll be having updates every day. In fact, I have so much content, I have to figure out how to space it out. I'm like, oh my goodness, I've got content now that's taking me through April. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Because I've got, you know, I can't get everything in as quickly as I want. Because you don't want to put like 3 of the same video up in a row in the same week. So you have to spread those out. And, you know, so a big thing is just subscribe to us and we'll do our best to get the content up to you and not overwhelm you.
Right. And we'll have links to those accounts in the show notes so people can just click on that and easily give you a follow and learn all about it. So before I get to the last question, Will, is there anything we didn't talk about that you hoped we'd cover?
I just want to say that I think the sportsman racing, this endurance racing, I wish it had been around when I was a kid. Not that I didn't have the chance to run series like the Firehawk, but isn't this amazing, Bill, that we get to go out there and just race what I consider pretty economical cars and have fun?
It is awesome. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of our team last year was their first time ever wheel to wheel racing.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any incidents. We didn't have any issues. And, you know, these folks are like, wow, look what I can do now. I can do this. Easy. Yeah, the barrier to entry is so low. We are very lucky. You're right.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, this series exists, and there's a couple other of them that are like it, you know, like Lemons. I haven't ever done Lemons yet. I want to do one, but it's a little different. I mean, that's a party where a race breaks out.
Oh, I got you. We've never done Lemons either. We're a little, I don't know if I want my trunk filled with dirt, although maybe that's just a rumor.
Well, they just, I mean, like I said, basically it's a party where there's a race that's occurring at the same time. And if you take it too serious and you get too argy-bargy, as Calvin Fish would say on you know, the networks, you know, they're going to take you and bring you in and talk to you pretty sternly.
Yep. Well, it's time for the final question.
Okay, so, I'm ready.
Will, have you ever been late to grid?
Ooh, that's a good one. Yes, I will tell you I've been late to grid. And one in particular was my very first driver's school. So I had a Volkswagen Rabbit, and it was his first time out. So like anything, it was all I could do to come home from college and get the car ready to go. The vacuum booster had broke on the car, so the car wouldn't idle. So you couldn't sit still and it keep running. So what I would do was at driver school. How they passed me, I have no idea. But I was sitting back in the paddock at Nelson Ledges, and my dad and I would get the car started. You know, we'd push it started, and I'd roll, and I would wait until they were already rolling out to grid, and I would just roll right with them because I couldn't afford to stop, because as soon as you stopped, you couldn't keep the revs up enough to keep it from stalling. So I was late to grid for almost every session at my first driver school because it was the only way I could get through it.
Oh my gosh. But you pushed on, you got through it. That's a great story.
I did.
Well, Will, it was great having you on, learning a little bit more about your background and where you're taking the team this year, and we wish you much success in 2024.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, a big thank you to Will for sharing his insights and more about his motorsports journey. If you get the opportunity to see Will and the Team Salen race crew at the track, be sure to head out and see them. And if you can't, be sure to give them a follow on social media and see all the great things that they are up to. You know, a few updates here. Last night, I had the opportunity to spend some time with 100 people from the NeOhio region of the SCCA. It was the annual awards celebration night. The cool thing was so many previous guests there that came home with hardware. Very cool to see. Congratulations to all of them. The Radar Racing team is working hard to get the cars ready for the first race at the NCM complex with Champ Car. That's going to be March 16th and 17th. Be sure to give Radar Racing a follow on Instagram and Facebook to see all the great work that they're doing to get those cars ready. And if you are looking to get on track and you want to rent a seat, we still have just a couple of seats left throughout the season. I think one at Mid-Ohio, one at Pit Race, one at VIR. So check that out. Don't forget our show sponsors, LMS EFI, ETC, which is great coaching, and of course the crew at Atomic Autosports. Stay tuned. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to have a solo episode where I talk a little bit more about my plans for 2024, upcoming ideas for the podcast, and of course there's going to be a new March challenge. I hope your February challenge is going well and it's helping you prepare to have your best year on track. And with all of that, do one thing for me. Don't be late to grid.